Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And yes, we are back here on The Punch Out, 17th of August, 2021. Very happy to be back with you here on the show. And plenty for you here on the show, as we always do. We're going to be talking about the devastating earthquake in Haiti today. Also going to be talking about the increasingly deadly realities of work outdoors due to the climate crisis. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we're going to start with the new COVID ICU crisis here in the U.S. The surge in the Delta variant in the United States has caused, yet again, a serious issue with occupancy in ICUs all across the United States. As the New York Times reports, quote, data from the Department of Health and Human Services shows that the number of hospitals with very full ICUs doubled in recent weeks. Now, one in five ICUs have reached or exceeded 95% of beds occupied, a level experts say make it difficult or impossible for health professionals to maintain standards of care for the very sick, end quote. The Times goes on to say further, quote, seven states, Arkansas, Florida, Hawaii, Louisiana, Mississippi, Oregon, and Washington have hospitalization levels exceeding their most recent winter and summer peaks. There are few signs that the rise in hospitalizations is slowing nationally, although in Missouri and Nevada, where hospitalizations started rising earlier in the summer, the increase may be slowing, end quote. And with the overall trends seeming highly regional and closely linked to larger populations of unvaccinated people, it's important we don't lose sight of the fact that all across the country, the micro trends as it regards vaccinations are making this truly a national crisis. For instance, in New York State, the average ICU occupancy is 65%, but at Harlem Hospital in Harlem, New York City, there is a 98% occupancy rate in the ICU. In Chicago, at St. Bernard Hospital in Englewood, a black working class community where over half the population receives food stamps and 72% are at risk of experiencing hunger at some point in the year, 99% of the ICU beds are occupied. At Vaughan Regional Medical Campus in Selma, Alabama, they have a 99% occupancy rate, 7% above the state average of 93%. At St. Francis Medical Center in Los Angeles in the Linwood area, where 56% of the population makes $40,000 or less, they have a 97% occupancy rate. And in Berea, Kentucky, where nearly 40% of children live below the poverty line, St. Joseph's Hospital ICU is 100% full. I point out some of these particular areas, not just to note that there is a correlation between lack of means and vaccination in the U.S., but also, and notably, because many of these areas before the pandemic were in the worst possible position to deal with big surges because their healthcare infrastructure was inadequate and there were never enough ICU beds to begin with. So this Delta variant surge is just further revealing the comorbidities of our society created by the capitalist provision of healthcare. The New York Times also notes that, quote, more young people are being hospitalized. The number of children in the hospital, more than 1,800 right now, and the number of new admissions each day are the highest they've ever been based on federal data going back to October, end quote. Now, in some ways, this isn't surprising because the Delta variant is more serious. So to the extent more unvaccinated people are getting it, that they would be getting sicker than perhaps might seem quote-unquote normal, whatever that is, I guess based on last year. And the fact that some states are breaking ICU records is logical, if terrible. And it also speaks again to the issue of vaccines being an effective way to curb the virus. All that being said, the surge happening right now is very serious. As much as pandemic fatigue is setting in on all of us, as a society, we can't let our guard down yet. A new study from the Union of Concerned Scientists is documenting how the rise in extreme heat waves due to climate change is seriously endangering those who work outdoors and could reach crisis proportions by mid-century. as The Guardian summarizes the report, aptly named Too Hot to Work. Details, quote, by 2050, nearly 60% of outdoor workers, such as construction workers, emergency responders, and farm workers, could experience at least 1 week of workdays when extreme heat makes it too dangerous for them to work. This is in a scenario where little to no action is taken to reduce emissions. And just for you to know, currently less than 10% of outdoor workers lose workdays to extreme temperatures. Currently, 32 million people in the U.S. have jobs that fall into the category of outdoor work, yet there are currently no federal heat safety standards that protect workers during extreme heat. And only two states, California and Washington, have permanent heat standards for outdoor worker safety. The report also lays out that, again, as summarized by The Guardian, quote, southern states will face the largest number of days when working outside is all but impossible. In Louisiana, for example, workers already lose about $1,000 in wages because of days when it's too hot to work. That figure could increase to nearly $5,000 due to 34 days worth of lost work time annually, end quote. They go on to further note that, quote, people of color will be hit especially hard by extreme heat. People who identify as African-American, Black, Hispanic, or Latino are disproportionately represented in outdoor work, comprising about 40% of the outdoor workforce, despite making up only 32% of the U.S. population in general. And they go on to further say that overall, quote, staying home on hot days would ultimately cost an average outdoor worker about $1,700 each year, amounting to $55 billion annually in lost wages for all outdoor workers. The most severe impacts will be on construction and extraction workers in fields like mining, who risk losing $14.4 billion in earnings annually, followed by installation, maintenance, and repair occupations, who could lose about $10.8 billion. The Union of Concerned Scientists has broken down their data by congressional district, which gives a deeper sense of the impacts. In Mississippi's second congressional district, essentially the Black Belt of Mississippi, where median family income is only $37,000 a year and nearly a third of the population lives below the poverty line, they could see $251 million a year in lost income. And just to note, strictly outdoor employment isn't even in the top five of the most common jobs, or in another way of saying that is among the top five most common jobs in the 2nd Congressional District of Mississippi. There are not jobs that are mainly outdoor employment. So it gives you a sense of how serious the impact could be on economies across the country, even in places where outdoor work is less prevalent. And already, people who work mainly outdoors are 35 times more likely to die of heat exposure than other U.S. workers. And there's really only so much you can do to address this. As The Guardian also details, quote, while some workplaces like construction companies are moving their work hours to earlier in the day, there are trade-offs. Shifting work to nighttime hours has been associated with higher levels of mental and physical health problems. And also, as one expert told The Guardian, quote, emergency medical services can't just shift to cooler hours of the day. If you're a parent and you have children who need to get to school at 8:30 and your shift starts at 6 rather than 8 as it did before, it becomes a lot harder to get to work and get your kids to school. Earlier this year, House and Senate Democrats introduced the Asunción Valdivia Heat Illness and Fatality Prevention Act, but it hasn't attracted much support. The Senate version only has 9 co-sponsors out of the 50 Democratic senators. Past versions of the House bill haven't even gotten to 80 out of the hundreds of Democrats. And OSHA is still resisting setting permanent standards under the Biden administration. So functionally, Democrats are doing very little to protect workers here. And you might add, they aren't doing that much for the climate either. This just all goes to show how serious and how deadly the impacts of climate change really are. Well, as you've undoubtedly heard and seen by now, on the 14th of August, Haiti was hit by a massive earthquake. 7.2 is the magnitude. At least 1,400 people and at least 7,000 are injured. Numbers certain to climb as the country continues to dig out from the destruction. Massive devastation has been the state of affairs in the wake of this earthquake. The New York Times reported that, quote, the heavy concrete rooftops and domes of churches across the southern peninsula are now caved in, tabernacles crooked or buried under rubble, walls marbled and with deep cracks. Every church seen by reporters from the New York Times in a 15-mile drive in and around Les Cayes on Sunday was completely destroyed or severely damaged. The cathedral in the city of Jeremy, an architectural landmark built more than a century ago, was left in ruins. The news agency People's Dispatch has reported that preliminary reports on infrastructure damage asserted that the earthquake destroyed 13,694 homes and 13,785 other buildings. And further that, quote, according to reports, thousands of people are still missing. Tens of thousands have been displaced from the destroyed or damaged homes, and hospitals in the area have been overwhelmed by injured victims, end quote. The final toll could be massive. Many are already drawing parallels to the massive 2010 earthquake, which was of a 7.0 magnitude and which left between 220,000 and 300,000 people dead and 1.5 million people affected. Even worse for Haitians, Tropical Storm Grace is lashing the island with wind and rain, causing serious flooding and hampering relief efforts. And these natural disaster events, of course, come amidst a range of other challenges. First and foremost, the man-made neocolonial disaster, that is Haiti's government, which has left the country with an almost total lack of public services and infrastructure that was already well below adequate. Secondly, the country is in the midst of an intense political crisis that has seen the central government lose all popular legitimacy and that has also resulted in the assassination of the country's president. One very real fear is that these natural crises will be exploited by the de facto government to strengthen their very authoritarian hand and even further choke off democratic space. It is also, of course, possible that under the guise of international relief, the presence of foreign military forces on the island could also increase to back the government and also further entrench the status quo of poverty and deprivation, which, of course, is what happened after the 2010 earthquake. One thing is for certain, Haitians are living in an increasingly precarious reality between crises that are both natural and man-made. That's the punch out for today. We're with you Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. here in New York, East Coast Standard Time, 2 p.m. in Los Angeles, Pacific Standard Time, and 9 p.m. GMT. And of course, you can support everything we do here at Breakthrough News at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. It's your patronage that keeps all of our offerings here at Breakthrough News moving forward. And of course, you can check us out across all your social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at BT Newsroom.